And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome to this edition of the Hagmann Report. It is Thursday, December 14th, 2007. We have a great show lined up for you today. Keith Hansen, bottom of this hour. And then top of next hour, Steve Quayle, Derek Gilbert taking us out. But a lot of news to get into in the meantime. FBI text revealed insurance policy to prevent Trump presidency. We can't take that risk. FBI officials discuss insurance policy against Trump presidency. I dealt with this in my morning show. Welcome to the Hagmann Report, of course, our flagship show, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, as heard on the Global Star Radio Network and BTR and YouTube Live. But, yeah, dealt with this on my morning show. There's a lot going on, obviously. A lot going on behind the scenes, a lot going on with respect to the takedown, the takeout of our presidency, our constitutional republic. It's a war. And you know, Joe, let's get right into this, okay?
Yeah.
Look, I'm not seeing any kind of attempt or any kind of actions by Robert Mueller, the special counsel, favorable to Donald Trump. Are you?
Well, no. I mean, what would you expect to see?
Well, you know, you hear these some of these
you know,
people
we go
out
back
there
to, about, you know, the Mueller secretly working with Trump to drain
the
swamps and the sealed indictments and yeah.
I'm not seeing any of that. I see no love there. As a matter of fact, I was unimpressed after watching the totality of Rosenstein, his appearance yesterday. I mean, 5 hours. I'm not seeing any, you know, look, I'm not impressed by his testimony. I have no confidence. Look, they need to gut the FBI and the Department of Justice. Fully gut both. I mean, fully gut. With the exception of rank and file agents on the ground. I know a lot of good agents, by the way. Go ahead.
What we learned through this is not of the Trump-Russia collusion, but of the Hillary Clinton, FBI, DOJ, DNC collusion, media collusion that took place before the election.
It's not collusion, it's conspiracy.
Yeah, absolutely it's a conspiracy, and they were all involved in it at the deepest levels. Hence, you know, you see Comey at the head of the FBI, Loretta Lynch, the tarmac meeting, and so much more there. And the only thing that has come from Rosenstein testifying is a number of lawmakers demanding more answers about the FBI and the anti-Trump texts and the FBI's role in the election. And one of them is Senator Chuck Grassley is calling on the Justice Department to hand over more information regarding the text messages exchanged between two senior FBI employees and any communications that they had with FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. And he's not the only one calling for more information into this, and we see others calling for a special counsel to look into these matters. But it's not going to go anywhere, and it doesn't matter.
Look, I think Judicial Watch is going to get the records first, but it's not going to go anywhere. You know,
you'd have to bring down half of the DOJ and FBI's top brass.
Yeah, I know. But I've got to hold out some level of hope that there's in some way that we are going to see justice served. Come on, we cannot. How is it possible that we, with all of this criminality, that we're not going to find or not going to witness anyone from the Hillary Clinton, Obama, Loretta Lynch, Mueller, Comey camp in handcuffs? Or is that what you're saying? We're not going to see any justice served?
Nope. No, not at all.
Can we fashion up a revolt because of this? I mean,
yeah, we can.
But is there?
I mean, that's what it's going to take if you want to see that kind of action and that kind of justice. 500,000, a million people protesting in front of the DOJ or the FBI, and that's just not going to happen. I mean, these people are not going to investigate and incarcerate themselves.
True.
So,
what's your confidence level in Congress?
What can Congress do? They can only subpoena people and gather information.
Right.
Then they task the DOJ with investigating based on the information that they find. So again, you know, they're not going to investigate themselves.
I'm listening to comments by Andrew McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, and you know, I don't agree with everything he says. And certainly I'm not in agreement with his latest statements about there's really no criminal, there's nothing criminal to be found with respect to the texts and some of the activities and actions of the FBI. But I don't believe it's been fully investigated to make that determination.
And also, I heard this, either heard this or read this yesterday. The whole purpose of a special counsel is first, one of the first and foremost things about the special counsel is it's supposed to be impartial. It's supposed to be free of conflict of interest, free of any, even a hint of conflict of interest. And here, you know, you have these same people who are investigating Trump-Russia collusion, the same people who basically conspired to create the Trump-Russia collusion. Not only that, they let Hillary Clinton and anybody and everybody that was surrounded with her off with immunity by changing things in the rulings, like we saw the language from gross negligence. And it's just, it's unfathomable. And all this has come out in the public. We see the extent, at least the very tip of the extent of how deep the corruption in the FBI and DOJ goes. And as you said, once more things start to become uncovered, it'll be interesting what we find, but I guarantee there's going to be something there. And we've only read, what, almost 400 text messages out of 10,000?
Yeah.
But no investigations into this. It's a vast right-wing conspiracy. It's craziness. You know, you're just ignoring, you're distracting from Trump's investigation and the Russian collusion. This is what we hear by the media, if they even bother to address it. And there doesn't seem to be much support in Washington to move on this. It seems like only a very small handful of people are in an uproar and calling for this to be looked into. But it's not gaining any traction among establishment GOP independents that would make any meaningful difference.
Well, true. At this point,
where is Sessions?
That's the other thing. Where is Sessions? Sessions has not picked up the white courtesy phone. He's not responded to anything. He's recused himself, which leaves Rosenstein in the position to make the calls, which is untenable. So, okay, what's left? Now, all right, I can tell you this, Seculo, part of Donald Trump's legal team. I do believe, Seculo, for what he said, that they do have a decent relationship, a transparent relationship with Mueller, but I think that's going to come back and bite him in the butt. I'm in favor of having Donald Trump fire, or have Donald Trump asking Rosenstein to fire Mueller for cause, and that cause being ethics violations in violations.
Okay, I can get behind that.
Okay.
But
Rosenstein's not going to do it.
And
so then you'd have a Saturday Night Massacre appearance.
And what, okay, this is take us down an interesting path in this conversation. I read a report today on an interesting poll that talked about the conflict of interest and the bias in the Mueller investigation. And I don't remember the exact numbers, but it wasn't along partisan lines. It wasn't polling Republicans separate from Democrats. It was just a general poll. And I'll look for the article, but what it said was that 54% of Americans don't believe that Mueller's investigation is fair or balanced, or that there is bias there. They believe there is bias there, over 54%. So this is creating a credibility conflict inside the Mueller investigation. Now, if Trump were to fire Mueller, he would then have the appearance of some kind of wrongdoing, having fired Comey, even though Comey said he was not investigating Trump. He was instead investigating the election attempted collusion or whatever, not collusion, manipulation by Russia. When Trump fired Comey, he got accused of obstruction of justice. If he were to fire Robert Mueller, even with cause,
right,
he would, whether true or not, the perception would be painted that he is further obstructing, and he is, you know, hiding, doing this to hide something, to hide some,
all right,
some charge or whatever information that was going to come out about
okay.
him. But again, the public poll that I read today was over 54% plus believe Robert Mueller's credibility is damaged in this investigation. So that was interesting.
You know, there is some hope. But okay, what I in my morning show, I played a 30-second clip or a 15-second clip. I have not heard anyone talk about this, and I don't have the clip in front of me, but it was from a Democrat from Washington State who asked Mueller or Rosenstein if the special counsel would investigate claims relating to the sexual allegations against Donald Trump. Meaning, I guess, would they expand that special counsel investigation well beyond the allegations of collusion with Russia? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's a problem right there. And I think that one 15-second audio segment to me tells me more than I need to know with respect to the intent of this political assassination that's going on. And let me ask the listeners and viewers out there, have you ever in your life, I'm talking about people over 50 years old like me, all right, in your lifetime, have you ever seen anything like this?
No.
Are you over 50?
Oh, I didn't hear that part. Sorry.
You weren't.
I thought you said anybody.
See,
who.
Anyone.
I wasn't listening. I was reading.
You know, 34 years of, I wasn't listening. That's, you know, that's the father saying that. You raised kids. I didn't. What'd you say? I didn't hear you. Didn't hear you, Dad. You go out mow the lawn. Didn't hear you. This is a political assassination, the likes of which we've never seen. This is to sabotage the president as well as the office of the president. This is to take down our representative republic. Some call it a democracy. If you say this is to take down our democracy, I'm not going to fight you over semantics. We have larger fights to get into. The fact is, the claims, by the way, of the conservatives, of the people on Fox News, Alex Jones, Roger Stone, their claims were proven accurate. Judge Napolitano was on Fox News back in February, March. Remember that wiretapping statement from Donald Trump that put everyone in a tizzy? Wiretapping, you know, shame. It was about him being wiretapped. Well, he's been proven right. And the wiretap originated, as a candidate, he was wiretapped. As the president-elect, he was wiretapped. And as the president, he was wiretapped. And he was wiretapped on the basis of...
It's a lie, wiretapped.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not.
I know, but...
GCHQ out of the UK was part and parcel to this. But it was originated, the NSA also was part of this, but...
Right, it was multiple levels. So
right.
FISA warrant secured through the dossier, which
exactly.
is a whole other scandal in itself.
Yeah, I was having trouble articulating that, yeah.
To what the NSA has done to other targeting through wiretapping of foreign officials and whatnot, which was separate also. Which is what apparently got Flynn caught up in some stuff. But
hey, I would be remiss if I didn't say this. Nice broadcast brought to you by Omaha Steaks, omahasteaks.com. The best of the best 21 day aged beef. My goodness, it's flavorful. Melt in your mouth, filet mignon. It's great stuff. Go to omahasteaks.com. Type in HH in the search bar. If you have anybody on your list this is a perfect gift for anyone. And, you know, while you're doing your Christmas shopping there's still time left. Go to omahasteaks.com, HH in the search bar while you're doing your Christmas shopping there. Get yourself a pack of my family pack for under $50. Again, omahasteaks.com, HH in the search bar. More on that later. Go ahead, Joe. I didn't didn't mean to overtalk.
Well, no, there, I just wanted to point out that, you know, just look to the road that got us here and all of the garbage that the mainstream media has spewed out, all of the behind the scenes stuff that we've seen. And, you know, from the wire, look at all the way back into January. Was that January 20th, or the day of the inauguration, when they printed that story in the New York Times about the wire president being wiretapped? And remember how he was a liar and this and that. Then it came out they did have FISA warrants. And this whole, Trump has been just destroyed by the media, or attempted to be destroyed by the media in any and every turn he takes. And especially with this whole Russia collusion thing. I mean, this was a narrative that was created right out of the heart of the DNC and Hillary Clinton campaign, and spoon-fed to the media so that they could try to change the public relations image of Trump and that swell of ground support that he had. And what they have been able to do through this is to block themselves from so much of the criticism and the digging of people into what their actions were during this election. It's almost like it was a move of distraction. They know that they're guilty. They know what they did. You know, they went out probably along not only ethical lines, but legal lines, breaking the law to try to secure the win for Hillary Clinton. Then when they find out they're not going to, you know, be protected anymore, they have to have a strategy in order so they don't get brought up on charges themselves for what they've done. And this is their strategy.
This strategy is banana republic. This is Soviet style, in my view. And you've got deep state swamp lawyers. You've got four corrupt swamp lawyers,
right,
Conspiring to take down the president to cover their own butts. You've got Comey, the leaker, the ringleader, who took $1 million corporate bribes to protect the Clintons for the last 22 years. Think Lockheed Martin, HSBC, Paola. You've got Robert Mueller, the mule. While FBI director, he covered up corrupt Clinton Uranium One deal.
Let me ask you this. If Trump wasn't in the White House, do you think that we would see more of a willingness to investigate the Clinton side? If it was more of a GOP mainstream candidate? I ask that because...
Man. Wait a minute. With who in the White House, did you say?
With any Republican aside from Trump. Because Trump was such an outsider. It seems like these people are willing to forego Hillary's corruption to ensure Donald Trump is not president for whatever their own purposes are.
I see where you're going with that line of thought. And it almost sounds reasonable until you think that they're all part of this. They're all covering their butts. Because if you look back, you know, the Gang of Eight, look at it, it's no longer a Republican versus Democrat issue. It hasn't been for decades. It's the globalists, it's the deep state versus the rest of us. That's the way I look at it. And you've got you would not have had, I think with any establishment individual in the White House, you would not have had, Comey would still be where he was.
Yeah. Well, see, because you had all these people in the FBI, in the DOJ, helping Hillary Clinton, and in the media, who thought that they were going to be looked upon with favor for what they were doing to protect her. They were going to have access. They were going to, you know, be able to get different contracts and line their pockets with money because of the access they had. They were going to be protected and not have to, you know, all this stuff with Trump was going to go away once Hillary Clinton won the election. And this is why, you know, there's an obscure quote of Hillary Clinton that sounds a lot like something George Bush said, and I'm going to try and find the quote to get it right, but I'll paraphrase it now. Something along the lines of, if the people ever found out what we did, you know, they would hang us. Something like that. I know that sounds like a George Bush quote.
No, Doug Weed, and I'm not sure, honestly, I'm not sure of the legitimacy of that quote.
Okay, I'm going to look right now.
No, she was reportedly to have said that on election night. If that, I think she said that bastard wins. Maybe she used another expletive. I don't know.
Okay, so that was a quote attributed to her by somebody listening, allegedly hearing it.
The closest thing I heard anyone of credibility validate that was the presidential historian Doug Weed, who was in contact with some people who were present on election night. And he had suggested that something very close to that was said, but he didn't come right out and say that it was that statement. but
well, I believe that statement's like very accurate, yeah, whether she said it or not.
Yeah, I agree. But you know, of course, the latest Bruce Orr and Nellie Orr, the Bruce Orr working for Rod Rosenstein, and Nellie Orr working for Fusion GPS, his wife. I'm going to throw out a couple more names. You're gonna be hearing about these people in the near future. Aaron Zebley. He was Mueller's right-hand man as chief of staff at FBI. And let's, another one, although Sean Hannity has mentioned Jeanine Marie, she's the attorney for the Clinton Foundation and also a former Obama DOJ political appointee. Now, she's working on Mueller's team. You're going to be hearing more. There's going to be more disclosures about her. There's a lot of stuff to come out yet about her. And also a guy by the name of Bill Priestep. Priestep. His work with the confidential informant as the Uranium One story gets going. And Lisa Page and, Peter Strzok's wife. Follow the wives, by the way. I know George Webb had mentioned a few things about this. This is a good thing to do. Follow the wives as well as we follow the money. There's a lot to be said about the integration of spouses into this. But anyway.
And back to Jeff Sessions real quick.
Yeah.
Starting to wonder. Well, I remember, I understand why, what his excuse was as to why he recused himself. But,
he could not be impartial based on, why did he recuse himself? What was his stated reason for recusing?
Okay, if I remember right, and I'll look this up, it's because it goes back to, what CNN reported that they had to, reported in May that they had to retract. Which goes to him sitting at a meeting where a Russian ambassador was that he didn't disclose to the FBI, and I'm about 90% sure that's the reason he recused himself. But there has to be, they either have something on him, or he was just steamrolled, being too nice of a guy. I'm just starting to wonder.
Either
that recusal
way,
is more strategic and done for Hillary Clinton's purposes more so than anything else.
You need a bulldog in there as a attorney general. You don't need some guy. You don't need a nice guy for an attorney general. You need a bulldog. And you know what? I'll take the job. Yeah, throw me in there. I don't need to be an attorney. I just need some targets. That's all. And I'd be in a target-rich environment there. I'd last about, 15 minutes.
Okay, I'll pull up an article here.
Too many scandals, I'm sure I'd be accused of, never mind. But by the way, I want to remind people about, remember Hillary Clinton? Remember the, Rose Law Firm file, the 800, FBI files? Go back and think about that. Remember that back in, my goodness, when was it? In the 90s, I believe it was. There's some, I'm gonna be getting into some things here.
He did recuse himself.
Okay, but for what? What was his stated reason?
Because he did not disclose meetings that he had with the Russians in his security clearance forms. But if I remember exactly what this was, it wasn't a meeting he had with any Russian one-on-one. It was like a group thing, and there was somebody there who was Russian. It furthers my idea that
Russian
this is a joke.
Russian dressing in a salad, right?
It's a joke, and there's something more going on with Sessions, because you don't step down as the top law enforcement personnel in the land because you forgot to disclose that somebody was sitting at your table, 20 years ago.
I agree.
There's something more going on there, and it's really bugging me lately, these last few days.
Well, one thing that's bothering me, and I just mentioned this earlier, but I want to go back to 1993, 1994, Filegate, which really hit the airwaves back in 96 or made news back in 96. And this was, referencing what Filegate was referencing is the White House FBI file controversy, the Clintons in the White House, Bill and Hillary. They had access to over a 2-year period to FBI files, FBI security clearance documents. And you remember this, folks? Remember this? This is back in 92, 93, 94, and this coming to fruition back in 96. All right. But I think that this, I really believe that there is some, there's a connection here to that when the background investigation or the background files were found. I mean, you're looking at nearly 1,000 files. And remember Craig Livingstone, the director of the White House Office of Personal Security or Personnel Security? Wonder where he is right now. What bar he's attending at the moment. Craig Livingstone.
I don't remember him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the... You saw,
maybe if I'm biased.
Yeah. But anyway, I think that there's a connection too. I really think that if you look back into Filegate, I really believe that there's a connection to what we're seeing today to Filegate. So anyway, Keith Hansen's
good. We'll skip the break. We'll keep going.
Let's just get Keith Hansen on when he's ready.
I want to kind of switch gears here. I don't know how many people saw this. If you go to HagmanReport.com, if you want to watch the video of this, CNN gloats, screams, and laughs at black woman who lost her job in the Trump administration. I don't know how many people watched the first season of The Apprentice, the Donald Trump show, and there was a lady named Omarosa, who I don't remember if she won or not. I think she did. She's been a longtime Trump friend, and
the Rose Garden raid. You going to mention that?
Yeah. So there have been reports of that she was, you know, there was a few reports that one, she was dragged, she was fired and dragged from the White House by Secret Service. There was another report that she caused, you know, a ruckus and pulled fire alarms on her way out. All these stories, which none of them turned out to be true. The Secret Service even came out on Twitter and issued some tweets saying that she was not escorted out of the, or she was not, you know, forcibly taken out of the building. None of this stuff was true. Well, CNN, and this article is up on Hagman Report. You can watch the video there. Female panel on Wednesday night. And they screamed and laughed at Omarosa losing her job.
I mean, they were celebrating it.
And, you know, you talk about the war on women. And there's a great write-up on the Daily Caller dealing with this. But it just shows the left's hypocrisy. You know, how they say they stand up for values and women's rights, and the Republicans have a war on women. And then they show the pattern of how, you know, people like Kellyanne Conway, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and on and on and on, just get, you know, roasted in the media.
Did you see Mike Huckabee's tell Mika Brzezinski to go pound sand over Sarah?
Yes, and Brzezinski, you know, Brzezinski has apparently some personal feud with Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She's been going on and on and on about her on Joe Scarborough Morning Joe show. And yeah, there was two interesting audios from this morning.
I'm gonna tell you, Joe, if I was Mika, I'd be wearing a bicycle helmet around the house.
Yeah, this morning she called Sarah Huckabee Sanders a sleaze bag, predictably stupid. And this is just this ongoing pattern of behavior. But I said that to say, apparently the war on women only counts if you're on the left side of the aisle. Because if you're a woman and you're on the right side of the aisle, you're fair game. Just like a lot of these sexual assault charges, you see some of the same people who say all women must be heard taking sides when it comes to their favorite Democrats and saying, well, you know, he shouldn't resign and this and that. But it's just crazy. So anyway, they made this big fake news story about Omarosa having been dragged out of the White House, kicking and screaming. And she went on ABC this morning. And there's some interesting exchanges in that interview, but as I said, the Secret Service came out and denied it, and apparently she's going to be selling rights to a book and writing a book soon about her White House experience, which I find interesting, because she's making claims that she saw things in the White House that made her uncomfortable, and she has a story to tell. I think she's just jargoning for book sales, but either way.
I saw things. I can't unsee. You got to be kidding me, man. Look, the left freak show, the progressive sleaze buckets on the left, and I'm sorry if that offends you, but all of this to bring us to the brink, in my view, of a constitutional crisis, and to celebrate this, you know, of all the, if you think back to the investigations into the background of Barack Obama. Everything that we had done, the right had done, the cold case posse, Mike Zullo, Carl Gallup, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, was done with respectability. And it was done with, no one celebrated the fact that there were 9 points of forgery on his birth documents. No one celebrated that. But the difference, there's a stark difference between the right and the left. You've got the conservatives, versus the progressive lunatics. Anyway, yeah. Go ahead.
There's just other stories out here
right now.
You know, people, you're going to see in the news in the coming days, you know, Omarosa being paid to stay silent and, you know, we need to hear her story. What does she know? All this craziness behind it. I believe it's just a thing to sell books, but, I also wanted to point out the hypocrisy of those women on CNN tearing her down and laughing at her departure from the White House. It's the hypocrisy that is the worst, because these are the same people who will turn around and vilify Donald Trump, saying, you know, he treats women badly and this and that. Meanwhile, they're the ones who are publicly, you know, mocking her, and it's just disingenuous, and it's
I'm telling you, though,
it's getting old.
We're gonna see this this sudden. I think it's gonna appear sudden on the horizon. This group of women being paraded out, and
oh yeah,
this renewal of charges of sexual inappropriate behavior levied against Donald Trump.
Did you see Bill O'Reilly claim that his lawyer heard a tape of a woman being offered $200,000 to say that she was sexually assaulted by Trump? O'Reilly said his lawyer heard it and explained to him what was on the tape, and that he might file suit to get the tape into the public arena.
Was it disclosed who made that offer?
No, I didn't. If it was, I didn't hear that part. I just saw where he said his lawyer definitely heard the tape, and he was the one who filled them in on what was on the tape. $200,000 offered to a woman to make up allegations against Donald Trump, and I believe that that's exactly what you're going to see. They're going to find the people. There will be people who take the money, and they're going to try to use this to, you know, get Trump to resign. We're already seeing Democratic Senator Kamala Harris calling for Trump to resign over the already accusations that were made. So, you know, just like you said, they're going to roll out old accusers. They're going to find new ones or fake ones to pay.
Kamala Harris is going to be on the ticket.
Oh, yeah, she will. And we have Keith.
All right. Well, let's get to Keith Hansen. Keith Hansen coming back. No break. It's all material. Keith Hansen, welcome to the Hagmann Report, sir. Welcome back.
Hey, guys. How are you? Great to be back with you, Doug, Joe. Hope everything's going well.
It is. In fact, it is. In fact, the last time you were on, you had caused, you did this great, what would you call it? This analogy about vehicles versus guns, I believe it was at the time. But you had
it was satire. It was my own little version of The Onion.
There you go.
And it was actually kind of funny, because there were a couple of people on Twitter that thought I was being serious.
I know.
Come on, dude. This is called satire. This is a little bit of tongue-in-cheek humor. This is how normal, sane, rational people deal with stupidity. We make fun of it. We don't get butt hurt. We don't find safe spaces. We don't cry for puppies and kittens. We don't have focus groups, and we don't demand that other people change their behavior. But
I had to be medicated for several days thereafter. So, it was great, because I got emails, and it was you had people going. It was just fantastic. So,
it would have been more humorous had it not been for the fact that 2 or 3 days after I delivered that monologue, there was a New York State congressman who actually introduced a piece of legislation called the 2017 Vehicle Ramming Protection Act, which, if passed, would task the TSA with establishing a rubric that would be used by minimum wage earning Home Depot employees to test the veracity of a person's claim that they're renting a pickup truck for legitimate purposes.
Now, I can't. Wait a second. Are you serious?
I'm absolutely serious. Yes, so look it up. It's the 2017 Vehicle Ramming Protection Act. I kid you not. I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried.
Oh, man, you've got to be kidding me.
And the whole thing was to establish some type of, again, questionnaire, some type of rubric, which again, you would have people in places where, and I'm sorry if you hear an interruption, it's my caller ID is beeping in the background, that people in Home Depot or Lowe's or any other type of place like that that would potentially rent a flatbed pickup truck or a Ryder truck would be responsible for questioning a person about their intent for the use of said motor vehicle. And so, you know, I mean, I could just imagine how easy it would be to thwart that. Is there a particular reason why you want to rent the truck? Well, yeah, I'm moving furniture. Okay. Where are you moving the furniture from? Well, Maple Street to Oak Street. Okay, sounds good to me. Sign on the dotted line. So,
wow.
Again, you know, the progressive liberal Democrats' response to a situation is, again, to legislate morality into people and evil out of their hearts. And you and I know that we can't do that. That's completely ridiculous. I did hear you saying earlier, you know, the differences between the left and the right. And, you know, I was thinking about that because I've been pretty fired up today, I got to be honest with you. And I think really what fired me up the most is the waking up this morning to find out that a politician, Kentucky State Representative Dan Johnson, who is a Republican, not that it matters, actually took his own life in response to allegations of sexual misconduct, sexual impropriety. You know, when you talk about the left, you talk about the right, you talk about the differences between the two. And the difference between the two, quite frankly, Doug and Joe, is that they have no sense of right or wrong. They have no sense of morality. They are morally bankrupt people. They have no God. They have no religion. They have no sense of right or wrong. The only thing that they have is a goal of winning and control. And that's it. And they will stop at nothing. You know, while I was on hold, I was listening to your conversation about Amorosa. It doesn't matter. All that matters is exactly what Rahm Emanuel said right after the election, which is we have to stop worrying about being right, and we just have to start worrying about winning. And that's all they care about. And it's a win. A win, when you're a liberal progressive Democrat, a win is a win is a win by any means necessary. And now you have people that are killing themselves rather than face the humiliation and the scorn and the scarlet letter that does not go away when somebody levies an accusation like that. And I'm really, really fired up about this, because this is getting to the point where it's out of control. That anybody can make an anonymous accusation against somebody, a person's life is destroyed before a judgment is ever rendered in a court of law, that battle is fought in the court of public opinion, that person's life is destroyed, their career is destroyed, their family is destroyed, and if it is determined that there is some type of exaggeration or embellishment, or that accusation is outright false, what is the legal ramifications for the accuser?
No, you're right.
How is that person allowed to be made whole? What mechanism is in place to make that person whole after their life, their livelihood, their family has been destroyed because of a politically motivated? I'm not saying, you know, I'm sure that there are some of these accusations that are legitimate, and some of them were, maybe some of these people did actually do what they did. But we have to look at the cultural roots of what's happening. And when you look at the cultural roots of what's happening, the whole reason why all of this is happening is because of the steps that the liberal progressives have been making ever since the 50s to destroy the family, to destroy what the image of a man is, to make a man, for all intents and purposes, a pussy, a beta, destroy the family, and make government the head of the household.
No, you're absolutely right. And in the case of Dan Johnson, I know I read some stuff on him this morning. He also struggled for 16 years with PTSD, and I'm sure that these latest allegations, you know, just made it that much worse. But who knows what he was going through and what led him to commit suicide. But Keith, you're absolutely right. I said that, you know, these congressmen who are resigning, like Al Franken, the senator, that they should not resign. There has to be a mechanism in place for or at least a process that people go through when these allegations are levied. You cannot accept or expect a man to, you know, just leave his job at just an allegation that anybody can make and think that this is somehow a good thing.
Well, Keith, where do you, okay, I'm tongue-tied. Where does it stop? Or
that's the thing. It doesn't.
Help me out here.
It doesn't stop. I mean, this is like that snowball that's just rolling down the hill, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And unfortunately, it becomes an avalanche, and it just picks up everything in its path. And you know, you talk about Al Franken resigning, but here's the thing: with Al Franken, that was a choice. Al Franken didn't have to step down. He yielded to pressure that was being put on him on both sides of the aisle. But he didn't have to step down. It's the people, after an allegation is made, the most recent one here, Tavis Smiley. Not that I'm a fan of his. I think I've maybe watched 10 minutes of his show before I turned it off in disgust. But just because I don't like his topics and just because I don't like what he's talking about, I don't believe that he should go off air. I don't believe in censorship. I believe in, if you want to listen to him, great. And if you let the free market decide what people want to hear and what people don't want to hear. That's why liberal progressive talk radio has never, ever been successful. But conservative Republican radio, libertarian radio, free market capitalistic constitutional conservative radio, man alive, is it rocking and rolling. So let the free market decide. And if a person doesn't like Tavis Smiley, you know, then great. They don't have to watch him. So I wouldn't be a person that would advocate, oh, great, thank God he lost his show. Just as much as I think Chelsea Handler is a reprehensible hag. But I wouldn't advocate for her show going off air. I would just say she'll do a good job of putting herself off air herself, just by virtue of what she's putting forth. The point I'm trying to make is that to have an accusation made and then your show gets, I mean, Garrison Keillor, accusations made, they pull his show. Tavis Smiley, an accusation is made, he loses his show. It's this knee-jerk reaction. We don't want to come under fire, they being the executives or the producers or whoever it is that happens to be behind the show. We don't want to come under fire because we're supporting or defending this individual, or we're advocating for the process to work its way through the court system and reserve judgment before we take action against this individual. It's, oh, we're going to yield to the public pressure because we don't want that microscope, that scrutiny being put on us. So what do? They pull the plug. And so this is going to become the new weapon of warfare in the liberal progressive Democrats' attack on anything that they don't like. They're going to make accusations. And they'll go after, they've been consuming their own. They've spent the past year consuming their own. So they will continue to consume their own. That, to a liberal progressive, that is collateral damage. And collateral damage is acceptable if the greater whole, the greater battle is won.
And you're exactly right. Just bowing to the will of public opinion and public pressure is just such a bad precedent to set. And over and over, we talked about here how, you know, at the even the very beginning of this, how they were going to use this to roll this back around and try to ensnare Trump and get him to resign and call for investigations. And it is crazy to see what's happening. And then you have, you know, the hypocrisy in the media about this too. You have this Me Too stuff, that one Time magazine Person of the Year somehow, and you have this you know, double standard in the media depending on which side of the political aisle you're on. And it's crazy. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. And when people stand up for themselves who are only just accused, when you see this being talked about on the news, it doesn't matter what the facts are. Even if these people were in the same state with each other, you're accused, you're done. That's the way it's going. And that is, it seems like the ball's already rolling. And how is anybody going to stop it?
Well, it really it isn't until there is a mechanism. Again, there needs to be a mechanism in place to ensure that a person that has an accusation levied against them, first of all, is afforded due process, as is their constitutional right. And again, we have two courts. We have the judicial court, which extends due process, and we have the court of public opinion, which is far more powerful, that neither recognizes nor extends due process to any individual except for those who are ordained worthy of it. Remember, there's certain people, especially on the Democrat side, well, let's not rush to judgment now. You know, they're a good person. John Conyers, perfect example of that. Well, we can't rush to judgment. Well, you know, if you're going to do it for one side of the aisle, it has to be done for the opposite side of the aisle. But the problem here is that you don't overcome those types. Once that allegation is made, once that accusation is levied at another person, that is a scarlet letter. When it comes to sex crimes, that sticks with that person for the rest of their life, even if it's determined that there was no culpability in a judicial court. The court of public opinion has already convicted and has already sentenced. And that's dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And, you know, what's going to happen when they do roll this back around to Trump, when they do what my dad said and find new accusers, whether they're people who are actually acquaintances with him or they are, you know, people who are paid to do this. There, I mean, we already see the Democratic congresswomen, the Democratic women senators have already branded together and are calling for resignations. And I read the Tavis Smiley thing today. I read the whole article. I read what his response was, and he made some great points in there. And we've seen other people deny it. There was, I think, Jeremy Piven out of the Hollywood made, but he still lost his TV show. So it's just craziness, and it is. You know, I don't see a way out of this until, you know, I mean, just imagine when you see these media people, one accusation, the people who defend these resignations, who defend the public opinion making the decisions, like Chris Cuomo. If I called CNN right now and dropped an anonymous tip that he sexually assaulted me, is he going to lose his job? Is he going to advocate, you know, him resigning? It's craziness. Until we can differentiate between what is fact and fiction and what is true and what is provable and what is not provable, well, we're not going to go anywhere meaningful here.
You know, I mean, look at what happened with the Duke Lacrosse case.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what happened to Rolling Stone magazine. Look at what happened to the prosecutor, Mike Nifong. You know, he was disbarred. There were criminal charges that were pressed against the accusers. You know, and that's what needs to. And obviously, not in every case, because I'm sure that there's some of these would pass the sniff test. But the thing is that to permit an anonymous accusation to have that kind of devastating effect on a person's life is dangerous. And again, here's the thing. We've all, as men, and I think this is also a larger war on masculinity as well, too, because don't forget about what you have being perpetrated and taught in liberal academic institutions, which is this notion of toxic masculinity. If you act on your preordained biological urges, then somehow, some way, you're toxically masculine. You're behaving in a way that is not acceptable in an air fingers quote proper society. Well, I hate to break it to liberal academics, but as a man, I am wired to seek out an attractive female for the purposes of procreation. And that is as basic in me as my desire for food, my desire for air, my desire for shelter and security. It is one of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. In fact, it's one of the base rungs of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. But today, if you permit yourself to actually act on any of your preordained biological urges, somehow, some way, you're acting in a criminal fashion. Sooner or later, it's yeah, okay.
And look at what is, there was a poll done recently where I think it was millennials. 60% or some millennials said that asking a woman out for drinks or to go out on a date qualifies as sexual harassment. And from last what I've seen, Congressman Trent Franks, he resigned. And the only thing I understand is that he talked to other staffers about the possibility of being a surrogate carrier for him and his wife, which hopefully there's more there. But who determines what is and is not sexual harassment?
The court of public opinion. That's what. And the accuser. You know, I had an etiquette expert on my show this morning, and we were talking about holiday party and family get-together etiquette. One of the first questions that I asked her was, you know, if you are invited to go to your company party or your corporate holiday party, would you even want to go in today's climate? God forbid you're seen with a drink in your hand and you make a comment to a coworker like, gee, that's a nice dress you're wearing. It's not what you said. It's what the context that comment is placed in by the person who receives the comment. And now if they're offended by it, if they're butthurt by it, if they feel as though somehow there was an ulterior motive in you uttering that statement, well, are you going to lose your job? Are you going to lose your livelihood? Are they going to be filing criminal complaints against you? I mean, again, where does this end?
It's a good point. You know, I often think back of, I don't know, I remember the Wilbur Mills Fannie Fox scandal back in 1974. It was, I don't remember the month, but it was back in 1974. Congressman Wilbur Mills and Fannie Fox, the Washington Fountain. Keith, I'm not even sure if that rings a bell to you, but you know, that was.
I was 9 months old, so no.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Sorry, I don't mean to make you feel old, but.
Wow, yeah, I feel old now. But you know, it was the reason I bring that up is because, man, times have really changed over the last 40 years. And it's just not for the better either. But
well, you know, and again, what I had mentioned earlier is that this is a whether it's an intended or an unintended consequence, this is a consequence of a social move, a social metamorphosis that we're undergoing. I think one of the first times that I was on your show, we talked about what I like to call the Homer Simpson effect. Think about television shows in the 1950s. The father, the man, the husband, was viewed as the provider. He was the bedrock of his family. He was a pillar in his community. The man had integrity. He had honor. There were lessons that were taught as a result of that man being in the family, and it was a nuclear family. The father was always respected because father knew best. What is the father portrayed as? Think of the media today. Think of television commercials. Think of sitcoms. How is the American male presented today? Specifically, the American father presented today. He's an overweight, inept buffoon who can't get out of his own way, who needs the woman to come in and clean up all of his messes. She's smart. She's the seat of common sense and rational thinking in the family. He's just out doing whatever he's doing, breaking things, making messes, and she comes in, cleans it up, and saves the day. The man is being ridiculed. The role of the American man is being ridiculed. Now, I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday whose opinions I respect greatly. And I was talking to him about this, and he said, but you're forgetting one thing, and that's the bridge. And he said, you know, remember Mad Men, the TV show Mad Men, which portrayed an advertising agency in the 1960s. So that was right around the time that women were joining the workforce. You had the feminist movement, the women's lib movement. Women were being told they could do whatever they wanted to do, and that, you know, they could have everything that men wanted, or men could have. And so that's where you started to see the guy sleeping with the secretary, she's sleeping with her boss. And that's really where, when you start to look at the feminist movement and the women's lib movement, that's really what started to empower this. And the shift went from the man being the patriarch of the family, the strong pillar of integrity and honor and reason and respect and loyalty, to what we have today. And now, you know, I find it awfully amazing that liberals sit here and excoriate all of this sexual impropriety and sexual immorality. Yet I don't hear a single liberal talking about when 2.5 Men was the number one show on television, where an HIV-ridden poonhound named Charlie Sheen now plays a character on television that's a poonhound. And his sexual exploits to a laugh track. Oh, this is acceptable. This is hysterical. This is funny. This is hilarious. Hashtag winning. You don't find liberal progressives excoriating any of that. See, it's okay when they're responsible for putting it out. It's okay when they're writing it, they're producing it, they're making money off of it. But it also establishes the framework by which their quasi-morality is used to attack other people if, God forbid, they find themselves in a situation that resembles the fiction that they've generated.
Man, you nailed it. You nailed it. That's exactly right.
Wow. All of this immorality, all of this sexual impropriety, you never, ever, ever See, if I produce a movie, you know, it's the hypocrisy. The example that I use today, if I use the N-word on my show, it would be the end of my radio career, or at least for the station that I work for right now. Because as a white person, that's not acceptable for me to use that word. But if I'm Quentin Tarantino, oh, well, I get a pass because this is artistic. This is an expression of my First Amendment rights and who I am. This is artistry. This is poetry in motion. So how come it's okay for one person to lose their job, lose their livelihood because of immorality, yet in another instance, well, it's celebrated. This is wonderful. This is great. Look at this. We got to give this guy awards and pay him more money for every additional one of these instances of filth and garbage that he's cranking out and polluting our society with. But that's okay.
And again,
we can't talk about
again.
That.
Exactly. Keith, I want to make sure people know where and how to listen to your show, of course. Keith on the Air, Keith Hansen Show. Keith, tell people. And, of course, follow Keith on Twitter at Real Keith Hansen. But tell people how to listen, because your show is absolutely necessary for the sanity we need today.
Well, I do a 3-hour show from 6 to 9. It's First Look, which is more or less Vermont and New Hampshire news and happenings and things like that. And then the Keith Hansen Show, which starts at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, which is just unbridled opinion, political analysis and commentary. And they can stream that online at WNTK.com. That's WNTK.com. And of course, they can follow me on Twitter at Real Keith Hansen. On Facebook at, Keith on the Air, facebook.com/Keith on the Air.
Perfect. And, I'm going to tell you folks, and we have a lot of listeners up in New England, New Hampshire, Vermont. So please tune into Keith Hansen, his radio show. My goodness, Keith, you just really blew it out of the water. Thank you so very much to adding such a intricate dimension to our show tonight. Thank you so very much, man.
Yeah, and who knows where this will go before the next time we talk to you.
Yeah.
And it's a pleasure having you, Keith. And stay in touch.
Anytime, guys. Anytime. Thank you again. God bless.
Have a great night. Yeah. We will be right back after these short messages with Steve Quayle and Derek Gilbert. But think about what we just talked about and where, I mean, each day the story is morphing into something bigger and bigger. And where will we be 1 week, 1 month from today? It's worrisome. We'll be right back.